Bill Belichick and Brian Flores dialed up a masterpiece in Super Bowl 53. We're breaking down just how the Patriots defense took over this game. Plus the heroics of Edelman and Gronkowski on the other side of the ball, how it went so wrong for Sean McVay and Jared Goff, and we're looking ahead to the off-seasons for both teams. It's all on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. Super Bowl Sunday is in the books. Andy, that was a nice change of pace from the entire 2018-19 season so far.
Absolutely. I was in the press box and I'm hearing, you know, media types, you know how they act, how we act. There's a lot of cynical comments like, oh, great game so far, riveting, high action. I thought it was. It just was on the defensive side of things. And, Garrett, you know I love Sean McVay and that Rams offense, but that was an absolute ass-kicking tonight. That was a schooling by Bill Belichick and a Patriots defense and a Patriots team that had been there, what is this now, eight times before, so time number nine?
Yes, that would be 6-3 now, correct? Yep. Yeah, it was, McVay said as much in the press availability after the game. He said, you know, he got out-coached, and that is what went down in this game. We're obviously going to break it down a little bit deeper than that. Otherwise, this would be a really short show. Should mention one thing versus our going. We might sound a little bit different. We're both sort of scrambling. Andy's up in Atlanta right now. As you know, if you listened to last Thursday's deep dive show, he kicked me out of our temporary home that we were supposed to be sharing. So I have been riding the rails with a bundle on a stick like a hobo ever since. And that's why I probably sound not quite as normal as I do. Connection's not so good as you ride the rails, but we're going to break this thing down. Let's start it with Bill Belichick and what he did here. And it was kind of what we had expected we might see from the Patriots, as we talked about on the last couple shows.
It was exactly what I'm feeling really cocky on this side of the ball. Now we're going to get to the other side with the Rams, and I didn't expect the Rams to be the defense to play as well. So we'll level it off. But right now, I'd say just go back and listen to our preview show, and you'll know everything that happened in this game. The Patriots did the two things we thought they might do. One, they played quarters coverage just like the Lions did. They did it on first and second down. They did that to take away the in-breaking play action routes. And then the other thing they did is they walked up their edge defenders up on the line of scrimmage, and that disrupted the Rams' tight split receivers. Kyle Van Noy was over a line near Robert Woods much of the game. And those two things combined together, what you basically had, Gary, the Patriots played a 6-1-4 defense. Six guys up front, one linebacker, and then four guys back. One of the guys, by the way, was Jonathan Jones at cornerback. He moved to safety for this game. So They played with three corners back there, basically. A lot of coverage prowess. It was a really uniquely structured defense that managed, just by the way they lined up, it managed to out-leverage the Rams' running game and passing game, and most importantly, the play-action game, the variation of the run and pass married together.
Yeah, it was a total mismatch, and you could see those downfield route combinations, those beautiful downfield route combinations you saw all year from the Rams. There were just constantly Patriots hovering in those areas, multiple Patriots hovering in those areas. It was so difficult. Even the completions the Rams got, there were guys with defenders draped on them. There was absolutely nothing easy for the Rams here. And we'll talk about their offensive performance in a little bit. But I guess the only thing we were slightly wrong on, we didn't quite have the matchups down. We expected a little more J.C. Jackson, not so much Jonathan Jones. I think we both thought Gilmore was going to be on Robert Woods. He was following Brandon Cooks around instead. Belichick and Brian Flores, they called a near flawless game here.
They did. I thought Gilmore would just stay on one side and play one side the entire time because they were going to play cover four or quarters coverage is the same thing. And by keeping Gilmore in one spot, you wouldn't give the Rams the pre-snap looks at the line of scrimmage. But what I you know, that's my fault, because what I didn't account for, Gilmore being as versatile as he is and having played so much cover four in Buffalo when he was with the Bills, he can play cover four on either side of the formation. He can travel around. Now, I don't know if J.C. Jackson can. Apparently he can, because that's what he did tonight. Gilmore traveled with Cooks. Jackson traveled with Woods, and they were both able to play man or zone. And cover four, often it's a zone, but it has a lot of man-to-man principles. You match up out of it. They did it wherever they lined up. It was a really nice job. And it was, what was also interesting, Gary, is a lot of times the Rams, in my sense, I'd have to go back and watch the film to see when and how they did this, but something they did that they don't normally do is put Cooks and Woods on the same side of the formation. And that was a little wrinkle from them. It obviously didn't amount to anything. But, you know, you wonder what – I guess if they win, we call it a wrinkle. And if we lose, we say, well, they got away from what they know. They got out of their designs, yes. Which I felt they did in this game. Those minus splits, those tight formations that we've been crediting the Rams for all season. Oh, nobody can guard them when they do that. They didn't play with those very much tonight. We saw them kind of widening their formations a little bit. The Rams did not look – it looked like someone you know wearing an outfit that doesn't fit them.
Yeah, that's a good metaphor. You're back on your metaphor game now. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I mean, you can count count on one hand the number of times where they really won a play schematically in this game. And of course, one of them was, I couldn't quite tell from the broadcast angle. You might have had a better look being there. When Brandon Cooks came wide open in the end zone, that was really their one. That was their one big win where Goff also saw the open receiver. And of course, you know, of all things, Jason McCourty, you know, I just chalk it up to the generic, that's a veteran play. But, you know, it was a heads-up veteran play. It came from the other side of the field, recognized Cooks had broken open on the busted coverage and came over and broke up the play. And that was really the Rams' best opportunity here.
Yeah, that was a huge play. Robert Klemko and I have had a lot of discussions about that play already. The CBS gave a terrible replay angle on it. I sat next to Connor Orr in this game, and Connor Orr had an – I'm not going to go into too much detail because I'm not sure he's supposed to have
legal.
This setup.
Yes.
But he had a very good game pass download that I had not seen before that basically gave us the freedom to use NFL game pass as we're watching. So I'm constantly telling Connor, jump back 10 seconds, slow it down. And I did that throughout the entire first half. And that one, that we never did get a great look at it. But Klemko talked to Gilmore after the game about what happened on that play. It looked to me like it was cover three, and Jones was supposed to run with Cooks down the route, and he did not. But Gilmore told Klemko it was actually cover four. So it was actually why I think Jones blew it. If it was cover three, then what McCourty did was the right play. On cover three, McCourty's job would be to come from the backside against that route. But if it's cover four, which Gilmore said it was, and I'm assuming he knows more than I know from sitting up watching it overhead, then in that case, yes, someone did blow the coverage, likely Jones in that case, which would make sense because Jones is playing a safety position that he's not used to playing. It's actually remarkable that didn't happen a little more. It's probably a little surprising the Rams didn't go after Jones tactically a little more out of when he's playing a new position. But you're right, McCourty, Jason, it was Jason, not Devin, a big, big play there. The other thing on that play, though, Gary, and the only reason McCourty had time to get over there, I didn't think Goff made the best of throws.
Yeah.
That ball had a little too much air under it.
It did not. I mean, we'll talk about Goff in a little bit, but he was not comfortable all night, and that throw was kind of emblematic of the night he had, because they got out-schemed, and you know, look, that's part of it. You get out-schemed, you're just not comfortable when you don't have open receivers to throw to, and those are the kind of plays that can result. But we have some Patriots offense to talk, we have some Rams problems to talk, we also have the off-season look-aheads coming up in just a moment. But first, a quick note here. You know, guys are terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. Just this week, after Andy kicked me out of our temporary home, I had a roller suitcase with a broken handle, 40 pounds worth of podcast equipment in it, and clothes and whatnot. I had to lug it all around Atlanta, and I pinched a nerve in my back. I didn't do anything about it, so now by Sunday night, I'm just in agony. And that's just how it's kind of how we are as guys. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/MMQB, fill out a brief medical onboarding, chat with a doctor, and get FDA-approved ED meds delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy. So take care of it. For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/MMQB. That's GetRoman.com/MMQB for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/MMQB. Let's talk some Julian Edelman. Julian Edelman, he didn't play last year. The last three Super Bowls he has played in, he has been borderline uncoverable, and that was the case in this game.
He is so good at setting up his breaks and changing directions, and he's such a patient route runner, and it's his hips. Route runners and their hips are, that's a big deal. That's where you get your deceptive movement. I've had guys tell me about that. Keenan Allen's a guy that gets cited for it most. I would put Edelman, he's not quite as good as Allen if we're just talking pure hip movement. But if you're talking all the rest of the movement, arm efficiency, keeping your arms tight to your body, your balance, your footwork, he's as good as any all-around route runner in the NFL. He absolutely just knows how to get open.
I mean, you just look back on the last three Super Bowls here. I mean, he had a bunch of huge plays in the win over the Falcons, and then you go all the way back. Boy, what was the one before that? That was Seattle, where Jeremy Lane had gone down, and it was a lot of Thurlow Simon trying to cover him, and he went nuts in that game when the Patriots came back and won. So it was 9 for 109 against Seattle. It was 5 for 87. Against Atlanta, including that huge deflected catch, and then 10 for 141, and he gets the Super Bowl MVP in this one. The CBS guys, the studio guys, were getting on the Rams a little bit for not doubling Edelman earlier and more often. They did bracket him a couple times in the first half, and he still got open.
Well, and the guy they were doubling was Rob Gronkowski. So that whole idea that Gronkowski's washed up, take that for what it's worth, because the Rams, they certainly didn't feel that way. Not only did they double Gronkowski, but they put Aqib Talib on him in their man-to-man. We're talking what the Rams are doing on third down now. They put Talib on Gronkowski, plus often double-team help. Now, some of that's the way the Rams' scheme was playing out. They keep an inside free defender. It's either a robber, if it's LaMarcus Joyner, or it's a lurker, it's Corey Littleton, a linebacker. Some unattached defender is free inside in their scheme. So naturally, you're going to double Gronkowski more, but Edelman's routes were primarily coming inside as well. And what he was doing against man coverage, he was winning from inside. And then, of course, as we've seen over the course of his career, when it was zone coverage, he was winning, getting matched against those linebackers. And Gary, a big sequence in this game, I thought, that led to their touchdown, the lone touchdown in this game, is something the Patriots actually had a conversation about with Dwayne Allen about this week. The Patriots went to their spread empty formations out of two tight end sets with Allen and Gronkowski both on the field. I don't believe that's something they've done all season long. I don't think Allen couldn't quite remember, or at least he wouldn't tell me if he could, but he didn't think they had done that either. Maybe that's why he was playing dumb, because he knew they would be doing it in this game. But they went to those two tight end sets. They even did it with Devlin on the field with Rex Burkhead. So they went 22 personnel, two tight ends, two backs. Edelman was the lone wide receiver. They spread out into empty from it, which they hadn't shown all season. And with two backs and two tight ends, a classic run personnel group, They got Edelman matched one-on-one against a linebacker and got a big completion out of it. Then they threw to Burkhead, and then they had the long fade throw to Gronkowski, which also came against a linebacker, Littleton.
Yep.
So imagine that. That's just a brilliant – people that say coaching's anything less than utmost importance in football, they're wrong, and this is great proof of that. Think of this. The Patriots go two back, two tight end, running formation, and twice they get favorable matchups with their two best players on a linebacker in coverage. Talk about offensive flexibility.
Absolutely. And look, that's the Patriots. We talk about how most teams, your best cover guys are on the outside. Patriots have their strength up the middle with Edelman and Gronkowski and James White. That drive was just unbelievable. It was a 5-play touchdown drive for the only touchdown of the game. And it was a direct, the cause and effects from play to play. They ended up with Gronkowski on Littleton because the Rams are scrambling to get someone else in that area with Julian Edelman. And that's, that's the poison they picked on that one. And obviously the Patriots just went right back to Gronkowski with Littleton trying to cover him. Corey Littleton was great in this game, by the way. He got put in some tough spots, but he made a couple plays in the first half, which is why this one didn't get away. But
Correct. A lot of guys for the Rams played well defensively.
Yep.
We get caught up in the negative because we have to decide. We have to explain why the Patriots won the game. But we're describing the only good sequence that New England had offensively, other than late in the fourth quarter, they had a couple of 25-yard runs with James Devlin on the field as a lead blocker.
Mm-hmm.
They were kind of wearing the Rams down a little bit by that point. Fourth quarter, you're getting tired. Your Patriots offensive line, it's a power offensive line. Joe Tooney, pull block, and Shaq Mason can do that as well. That's just Patriots staple stuff. They've done that all season long. Brockers stood out, and Dante Fowler stood out for runs stopping against it early on, but that didn't hold up, and the Patriots had their run game come to life when they needed to. But, Gary, I think that's the only story on the rest of it. The Rams played well. They kept New England off balance. Their D-line, I don't know if they sacked Brady. I think they did. I think they disrupted him on several snaps. Peters and Tlaib were up and down in coverage, but their ups came at the exact right moments. This was a tremendous defensive performance by the Rams. They just I feel like you go back to the other side of the ball to break down the rest of Super Bowl, which is why I'm a little surprised that Julian Edelman, as great as he was in this game and very important, I'm a little surprised that he's the MVP, given that this was such an emphatic defensive victory for the Pats. I would have thought it'd be Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah, I was thinking it might be Gilmore. It's always if we're talking about who people are going to vote for, they're always going to lean towards the offensive player. People are going to look at the box score and say, Gilmore didn't even have an interception. How can you, or he did have an interception. He had the game-changing interception, but he didn't. Yeah, maybe it should have been Gilmore.
It absolutely should have been Gilmore.
Yeah.
Not only did he have the game-changing interception, but he knew what throw was coming. It was a cover zero blitz, which the Patriots had not shown all mm-hmm. game, but the Rams, I'm sure, had some preparation for it because New England's done those cover zeros about 5 or 6 times a game ever since probably about Thanksgiving's when they really started doing it. And Jared Goff, when he gets in that far red area, we saw this at the end of the Dallas game, the end of the first half was a great illustration. He has a tendency to throw that front pylon fade to Brandon Cooks. Gilmore played that front, and they'd thrown that on the previous snap, in fact. So Gilmore played that front pylon fade to Cooks the whole way, and Gilmore was practically the intended receiver on the play. It was cover zero coverage at its absolute best, and it was by far the biggest play in the game. That's the only sign of life the Rams had shown, and Gilmore totally bit it away.
It was, and boy, what a call on that blitz. What a time to call that, dial it up. Brian Flores and Belichick just throwing the switch at the perfect time on that.
Yeah, well, and you know what they do, too, against out of cover zero, why they're comfortable calling it as much as they do? Because their cover zero really isn't fully a cover zero. What they often do is drop, and it's usually Kyle Van Noy. They drop him into the shallow crossing lane. So it starts out as cover zero, but somebody out of the overload blitz drops out late once the blitz has declared itself. So the whole reason you go cover zero is because you rush one more than they can block. Mm-hmm. So once they decide and once they've proved that, okay, we got the one more than they can block, that guy's getting in clean. Once Van Noy sees that, he then drops back. And the whole idea is to take away hot routes, quick routes underneath. It's a safer cover zero than most teams who just go, here's all our guys, let's hope they get home.
Okay. That makes sense. Kind of a fitting clinching drive here, the as you mentioned with Devlin and the O-line really hitting their stride here. 9 plays, 72 yards to wrap it up with a Gostkowski field goal at the end. Just kind of a nice way for the Patriots to put a bow on this season, considering what they've done over the past month or so.
What's also interesting, going, and you're right, and when they go to that spread empty formation where they put the bow on it, I know you're talking a different drive now, but we're talking their two scoring drives here, the one where they ran the ball and the one where they went spread empty. One common denominator out of those drives is Tom Brady can control the game at the line of scrimmage, and he can do that at any point, of course, but he checks in and out of the proper run plays with them, and then when they go spread empty, he's really in control. What got lost in this game is that New England controlled the game at the line of scrimmage when they wanted to. And the Rams, who've done that all year with their offense, Jared Goff rushing up there, getting the call from McVay once he sees the defense, they did not do that tonight. They did not want to show anything to Belichick. They didn't want the Patriots getting to make their defensive checks.
Yep.
The Rams huddled and stayed in their huddle all game. And it'll be interesting to see if Sean McVay, how he feels about that decision once he watches the tape. Because I think I'm sure he has 5 reasons why he did it. But from the 30,000-foot view or the outside looking in, I think you could argue that's a case of a team getting away from their identity a little bit. The Rams, they live at the line of scrimmage.
Yep. No, it's one of those things. If it worked, and there was some logic to it working, if it had worked, we'd say, boy, what a smart adjustment to make for the Super Bowl. It didn't work. So no, now we're where we are. We'll get into the Rams offense in just a moment here. I do want to give a couple of notes. Andy and I will have a deep dive show on Thursday. I think the deep dive show is going to become more sporadic during the offseason. We'll probably do a free agency show. We'll do a draft show, but I think that one's going on hiatus for the most part this offseason. But we're going to do one on Thursday. We'll look ahead to the offseason, talk about some of the upcoming headlines, and we'll take some of your questions. So send those mailbag questions, talkback@themmqb.com. We're both on Twitter, we're both on Facebook. You know how to get us at this point. I did want to take a moment. We always, at the end of every show, we thank the people who help Andy and I put the show together. It's technically the last show of the 2018-19 season. And we're all going to sign each other's yearbooks and go off for the long 3-day off season here. But I did want to quickly thank, while you are all still listening, Reed Foster, our researcher, Ryan Taylor, who helps us out with both research and some of the social stuff you see in the SI office. Ben Eagle, the special projects manager, has always been a big supporter of our show. Mark Mravick and Bette Marston, who actually free me up to do this show by taking on a little more of the editing workload every Sunday night, and we are very appreciative for them. Scott Brody, the new podcast czar at SI, he just got there, and he supports our show. Or so he says. We don't know yet, though.
No,
he might
be an
enemy.
We are extra thankful for Scott Brody, because the future of our show, I imagine, is in his hands.
Well, that's the thing. Is he going to be a friend or an enemy? We'll find out over the next couple of weeks.
I'm going to tag on a thank you as well. Paul Duncan, another one of my researchers, and Alan Oy, who's been my top game charter guy. Mm-hmm. For 3 years now, and he's a really good analyst. He's really learned a lot. He's starting to do some of his own writing. So follow him on Twitter. It's Alan Oy. He does a lot of Cowboys, Dallas Cowboys breakdowns.
And, of course, we have to thank Shelby Royston of Cadence 13, who I don't know. I don't know what we put Shelby through on a weekly basis. We tape the show late anyway, but it seems like we've just had frequent technical problems this year. There's the one show, it was actually after the Patriots and the Chiefs played in the regular season, where the internet was down at the studio, and there's really nothing you can do because the cable company's not going to show up at 1 a.m. to fix it for you. So Shelby had to do this ridiculous workaround just so we could get the show out. We had technical problems with some of the equipment down in Atlanta this week, and Shelby basically had to spend his week basically trying to patch this all together for the idiot people who can't do it for themselves. So I don't know. Shelby has just put in an obscene number of hours to help us just get these shows off the ground, let alone making us sound like we're like human beings that should be interacting with each other. So we are incredibly thankful for him.
No, I 100%, 100%. And I'm probably grouchy a lot of the time to him, even though I'm 2 hours, behind you guys, so it's not as late for me, although tonight it is, and I think I'm doing a really good job of gutting this one out here. It's almost 2 a.m. now.
But you are.
I'm probably hardest on Shelby of all of us, and I've got the least excuse to be so.
That actually my last thank you and my thankfulness goes to Andy Benoit. I said this before I knew you and I just read your stuff and listened to your stuff. You're the best analyst out there. You check your work, you vet your work constantly, and it shows. And like I say every year this time of year, I am incredibly thankful to be able to do this show with you. Because if you ever wanted to big time me and just kick me out, you have that power. You could call Scott Brody right now and just destroy me.
No, I think you're the best there is, Gary. I think you're the best editor I work with, and you're who I call when I need something. And I think you're the as smart a football guy as anyone I know. So it's a two-way street. Why are we doing all these emotional goodbyes? I mean, we still have some show left, right? Is one of us going away and hasn't told the other one yet? Why are we doing this?
We not only have show left, but we're going to be talking to each other for a podcast in like 3 days. We will actually be talking to each other like an hour after we're done with this recording. So we will move on because we have the Rams to criticize here. No rhythm for this offense. We talked about it a little bit with the Patriots side. A handful of plays. There was a play where Cooks came open on a sort of deep intermediate dig route and Goff missed them. There was early on a third, and I think it was about three, where Cooks came open on a nicely maybe offensive pass interference, but not called, but a nice little pick route, and Goff didn't spot him. It was just a completely disjointed offense, and I think it had a big effect on the quarterback, as it would, but I think, we talked about the Jason McCourty breakup on Cooks being open in the back of the end zone. I think that carries over. I think it carries over for your quarterback when it comes to a play like that.
And especially with that quarterback. That's what we talked about all week leading up to this game. You have to take Jared Goff out of rhythm. And how you do that is you take the Rams' first and second down offense out of its rhythm. You make Goff be a straight drop back passer, because that's really, I mean, he's good enough at it. He's in the NFL. He's a quality thrower and he's a good rising young quarterback, but that's not the strength of his game. And again, we said the Rams, they don't beat you with individual plays. They beat you with a series of plays. So you need to make them run individual plays. You don't want them flowing from one snap to the next. And New England got them back to those quarters looks. They rotated into man-to-man at times, just like Detroit did to the Rams in Week 13. They changed up their fronts. When they got in third and long, they brought five rushers and did gap exchange blitzes, so stunts and twists with the blitzer. Everything you could possibly want to do against the Rams, that's the absolute best blueprint for beating the Rams. And it's not like they invented this stuff, Gary. These items were on film, especially in that Detroit game that you mm-hmm. and I cited a lot leading into this contest, but from other games as well down the stretch. And the Patriots took the best of everything they saw on film. They sprinkled it in, and then they did do a little bit of their own twist by playing some guys at some unusual positions.
I guess going forward, and we're going to talk about the Rams offseason coming up in a second. How much we got a whole offseason now for Sean McVay to think about these things and bring these things out. How fearful are you, if you're Sean McVay, that the blueprint is out?
I'm not fearful because the blueprint's been out for a few weeks, and here they are in the Super Bowl still. Mm-hmm. But they probably need to add a dimension or two to their offense. If anything, they've got to become a better third down offense, which means working with Goff and making him a more comfortable player on third down so that they're not as dependent on their first and second down play action, zone action stuff. So it's Goff's development that's key. And it'll be interesting because Zach Taylor, their quarterback coach, he's leaving now. He's not their coach as of probably a few hours from now. I think he's getting on a plane and going to Cincinnati tonight. So Goff's going to be working with a third different quarterback coach in as many years. Now, I don't think that's the end of the world. It's not like an Alex Smith situation because you do have Sean McVay there. But, you know, that's a little bit notable. It's, a lot of this comes down to Jared Goff, and they got to figure out exactly what they have in him.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of saw to an extent what went on with the Eagles offense and how disjointed they were after losing their two top offensive lieutenants. So you do wonder what's going to happen with this Rams team. I mean, they're going to fall off the face of the earth here. They're still going to be an NFC contender for the foreseeable future. But, you wonder how it's going to work year to year when there's going to be constant churn with that staff. One guy who we assume is staying around is Wade Phillips. And as we mentioned earlier, he really did. They mix things so well. They had that one beautiful third down play where they, the two inside linebackers showed blitz, and drew the guards away. And then they ended up with Aaron Donald isolated on David Andrews, which is exactly the kind of matchup you want. I mean, Aaron Donald on any single blocker is what you want. And Donald ended up ragdolling Brady, and it was incomplete. And that was a great call, but he mixed it up, and I'm just not sure. You know, people say, oh, should have doubled Edelman. Well, you saw what happened when you doubled Edelman. They throw the ball over the top to Gronkowski, and now you're. Now you're saying, well, we should have doubled Gronkowski. There's no good solution.
No, they held the Patriots to 13 points. Let's not overcomplicate this thing. And when they did pressure Brady, that one play you cited specifically, they did a few times. It's the same thing that Wade Phillips did to Brady in the 2015 championship in Denver when the Broncos beat him. They showed a five-man rush, forced the Patriots to commit to their protection, and then they drop two of the rushers and only rush three. But once the protection's been set, if you see a five-man rush, you're blocking one-on-one out of a five-man protection, one guy on one guy. So you get three-man rush, but it's still the one-on-one matchups plus eight guys back in coverage. It's the best of every world because with the eight guys in coverage, Brady has to hold the ball. The two guys drop in the middle of the field to create the eight-man coverage. There goes the crossing routes, and you've got one-on-one blocking still, so it's almost the same effect as if you had blitzed them. It's a really good defensive approach. Phillips has done it a few times, and it has not been a hallmark of Phillips' scheme either. He did it in that Denver game. He had not done that all season long, and then he brought it out for Brady. Same case tonight. There was stuff that he had not done, including this three-man rush. He had not done that all season long, and he brings it out tonight. A really good job, good coaching performance by the Rams. Not their players got better over the course of the season defensively. There's a lot to like about it. Mm-hmm. You can't say anything bad about the Rams. They held Tom Brady to 13 points in the Super Bowl and lost the game. And by the way, Gary, when we're saying Brady's a legend, oh, he's great, you know, it's the end-all, be-all, let's remember, here's proof that it doesn't completely come down to the quarterback. Brady and the Pats had 13 points in this Super Bowl and won the game. Last year, Brady had 500 yards passing and lost the game. So it's a full team effort in a lot of ways.
Oh, no, you're totally true. If you said the Rams were going to hold the Patriots 13 points, how many of us would have rushed to our bookie to fork over all the money we had? I mean, it's funny. We just ran through this entire game without really talking about Brady, save for, you know, the connections to Edelman and that one five-play drive. They had to win it. You and I talked briefly at halftime about the interception he threw, and it was a play where it looked like he was fooled by the coverage, and the ball just came out terribly. It looked like he changed his mind at the last moment and just ended up fluttering out there. Roby Coleman got his hands on it, and it ended up falling into Corey Littleton's hands there. But do you have, I don't know, do you have any more insight on that? When we talked about it at halftime, I just said I was shocked that Brady had assumed that that was a man look that he was getting.
Yeah, I need to, that's the other one I didn't get a great look at. I tried hard on that play, even as they said, we talked about it at halftime at it. And for our listeners, another reason Gary Grambling's my, he hates it when I qualify, but he's my best friend in the industry. I've got some lifelong friends and cousins who are my really best friends, but in the industry, Gary Grambling's my best friend. And I felt comfortable enough to call him. I said, Gary, are you watching the game on DVR? Yes, I am. And I said, good. Well, can you go through every play for me and tell me if indeed Gilmore's traveling with Cooks, like we suspect? Gary was nice enough to do that, but we got caught up on that Coleman, Robbie Coleman play, and that's one we're going to have to see the film on, which really, it surprised me that CBS didn't go to the overhead shot on that, and they, I think they did later in the game, but it wasn't the right time to break it down again, so I'm eager to see the film, and I don't know if I'll get it in time for my flight back home tomorrow. I might have to do it later in the week. We'll see. But, Brady's first pass intercepted like that. That's more good defense by the Rams, I suppose.
It was. No, I like I said, I thought Corey Littleton especially, he had to make a couple of plays. And he made him. He had Marcus Peters made a big tackle on a Cordero Patterson on a third down to get a stop. I thought the Rams were pretty much maxed out with what they did defensively, and you know, obviously it just didn't work out on the other side of the ball for them in this one.
Can I add one more thing that's going to make all of our listeners feel better? Because I would imagine your answer is yes, right? I can add it.
Yes, I will let you add it. I'm going to allow it.
You're going to be glad about this. Every guy is glad about this, because if you're like me, there's a part of you that envies Tom Brady. How could you not? He's got one big flaw I saw in the locker room, and that is his feet are disgusting. His toenails, totally ruined across the board.
What?
Totally ruined.
Like mangled, or like he just doesn't take care of them?
Like they've been athletically diminished. Like they're brown and barely on there anymore. They're not very big.
Oof.
Yeah.
I
know someone who has ingrown toenails, so they've just got their big toenail removed. I didn't know you could do that, but apparently you can. I don't know if that's – maybe that's what Brady's done, but even then, significant discoloration with it. So Tom Brady is good from the ankles up. He's perfect, I'd say.
That's good to know. And he didn't even throw a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl. Loser.
That's right. Yeah. Horrible toenails, and he did not show up in the biggest game of his – well, what was it? Actually, it's probably about the ninth biggest game of his life. That's how good
he
is.
One of the nine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do some quick off-season look aheads. And as I said on the Thursday show, we're going to take a sort of more general look ahead for the big storylines of the off-season as a whole. But we did this with all the playoff teams as we went through. Let's do the Rams look ahead first. Obviously they have the pieces in place here. They'll have decisions to make. They're in, both these teams are in perfectly comfortable cap situations at this point. Rams have free agents coming here. A couple guys: Sue, LaMarcus Joyner, Roger Saffold, Corey Littleton, Dante Fowler, Andre Whitworth. I guess is he's not a free agent, but he was sort of hinting that maybe he'd consider retirement after this game. I really don't think he would, considering how well he is played and the fact that they should be a contender next year. But I guess to me, Dante Fowler is an interesting guy. I think he's a guy they could go either way on.
I do too, and I think Sue's a guy they could go either way on. Sue played a lot of snaps at defensive end in this game, and he showed up. He had a nice postseason. That's going to be an interesting one for them to judge, because Sue probably wasn't quite what they thought he'd be overall, but he got better down the stretch, which isn't typical when a guy's getting washed up. Joyner, I would think they'll want – he's a franchise tag player. I would think they'd want him back. It's going to depend a little bit on the price, though. Littleton, same kind of deal. I'd imagine they'd want him back. And then Saffold and Whitworth, they're going to do all they can to get those two back.
Yep. Yeah, I feel like I could probably get Joyner on a pretty team-friendly deal when we see what happened with the safety market last year.
Yeah, it's a good point. You could be right. And he's, I was going to be. I was going to say he's a less multi-dimensional safety, but that's incorrect because he has history at slot corner. So there might be some teams that could view him at, and he's actually a pretty good hitter and can play free safety. So that's actually very incorrect. He is a multi-dimensional safety, which might expand his market a little bit. He'll fit in a lot of schemes, but then again, to your point, we thought that about Eric Reed as well, and you know he didn't sign until what, Halloween almost, October, or something like that.
Yep. Edge rusher, that's probably the thing they need most if you're going to address one thing on this team.
Yes, absolutely. And Fowler, I don't know if he's good enough. You're going to have to pay him like a second contract veteran. He's not going to break the bank, but you're probably giving him double-digit millions guaranteed. And frankly, he's been extremely immature off the field, which is why they got to trade for him in the first place. So I don't know a whole lot about human psychology or growth, but guys that are immature don't tend to suddenly become mature when you make them eight-figure millionaires. You might want to consider finding someone in the draft at that position.
Yeah, it is interesting. There could be some veteran free agents more at the edge rusher position than we've seen in the past getting to the market. And the defensive line is just stacked in this year's draft, and you also have a lot of good edge rushers coming in. I would say it's better on the interior defensive line, but you still have a lot more good edge rushers coming in than you had, for instance, last year when Marcus Davenport's stock was really inflated by the fact that once you got past Bradley Chubb, it was like it was Davenport, and then you didn't really have a whole lot to choose from. Patriots offseason look ahead here. Obviously, Gronk says he's going to make a decision in the next week or two. We have no actual inside information. He might retire. He might not. If you want to read about it, Tim Rowan did a piece on his budding career in Hollywood as an actor, and you can get a feel for what's next, and maybe that will inform your opinion of whether he'll leave or not. But other than that, they have a couple guys here. Trey Flowers is a guy they'll obviously try and retain. A couple interesting decisions. Danny Shelton and Malcolm Brown are both unrestricted free agents. I don't know. Those guys are obviously not guys you would look at and say we absolutely need to keep them. But those are your interior guys. Same thing at wide receiver. Hogan, Philip Dorsett are unrestricted free agents, and then Josh Gordon is obviously a question mark. He's a restricted free agent. They can obviously keep him if they want to, and we'll see. We saw some reports this week that they expect to have him back next season, and obviously there's a lot of moving parts with that.
There are, and Cordarrelle Patterson, I believe, is an unrestricted free agent as well.
Oh, that is correct, yep.
So, and then the guy that's most interesting on their whole offense who's unrestricted, and probably I think priority number one, is Trent Brown at left tackle.
I was going to ask you, Trent Brown had a great season. What do you do with Isaiah Wynn? I mean, I know he's never played, but you did just spend a first round pick on him last year.
I forgot about Isaiah Wynn, and the reason they drafted Wynn is because they needed options for Joe Tooney at left guard. Joe Tooney, this time last year, he was very vulnerable as a pass blocker. Well, that's not the case anymore, and not only is he not vulnerable as a pass blocker, but he might be their best run blocker now. Shaq Mason's their most gifted run blocker, but Joe Tooney was phenomenal at times down the stretch this year, and including this game tonight. So you're not needing to replace him at guard, and he's still under contract. He's not going to be a free agent until 2020, so you have him for the next two seasons. So yeah, they might bring Isaiah Wynn back. Marcus Cannon signed for several more years. That's a good – I'd forgotten about Wynn. Maybe they do let Trent Brown walk, I guess. Boy, that's an awfully good player, though, to just walk away.
Yeah. No, they – I mean, look, it's not a bad problem to have here if you're the Patriots. But
Those D tackles you mentioned, Brown and Shelton, both of those guys, I believe, have fifth-year options that the Patriots have not picked up, which leads me to believe they're going to move on from them. Tread lightly on that. This team is built on its defensive line up front. Even if that's not the strength of the team, they have a very specific identity along their defensive line.
Yeah.
And Shelton, and then especially Brown, they fulfill that identity perfectly. So, but I guess it's they know, New England knows, just like we know, it is a deep draft or a rich draft at defensive tackle. So maybe that has something to do with why they didn't retain these guys.
Yeah.
Or why they didn't get the fifth-year option picked up, I mean.
It could be. If you want interior defensive linemen, this is the draft for you. Thing of the week, Andy. I will tell you this. I have a thing of the week. In the spirit of the holiday, I will tell you you don't have to do one if you don't want to do one.
What's the holiday?
That's the end of the season. Oh. It's kind of like a holiday.
You know, the holiday that all football guys get stuck with because it's the first time in a long time that there's no football in the way, and there's not even any kind of excuse like, oh, well, actually there is football. We've got this combine, or we have the draft, or we have free agency starting. None of that's in play yet is Valentine's Day. So Valentine's Day, football guys, coaches, scouts, hardcore fans, or analysts in this case, you got to bring it on Valentine's Day. So that's, but we're not, I don't think we're quite to that point.
I know. Yet. Well, I that's why I always like when the Super Bowl is on February 1st, because then I just go all out for Groundhog's Day. And then when Valentine's Day rolls around, it's like, oh, we just, all the stuff we did for Groundhog's Day.
Okay,
I'm
going to cut you off and go thing of the week first, and it's going to be about you,
yep.
And then you can lead into yours. When we were at dinner last night here at the hotel, the lady brought Groundhog's Day cookies to us. I didn't know they had – I eat holiday cookies a lot. I didn't know that they had made their way to that holiday. But the cookie was multiple cookies shaped like a groundhog's face. It was very cute. It was horrific when you bit just one side of the cheek out, which is what I did. You wanted an extra one you requested so you could take home to your kids. My question is, have you given the cookies to your kids, and how were they received?
I gave the cookies. I was not, I'll be honest, I was not tempted by the cookies. I really didn't think they looked that appetizing.
And I ate mine and regretted it as well. I thought that wasn't worth my sugar calories for the day.
Yes.
And so then I just ate my other sugar calories later, had the ice cream bar at the Hyatt Hotel where the Patriots were staying, actually. So, no, you made a good choice on that. I overdid it and regretted it.
But yeah, the kids, I gave them the cookies. They didn't eat them. They saw them and recognized them, and they were moderately excited. They were more excited about the mini footballs. I just got them two, like, mini Super Bowl footballs to bring back. But what I'm giving them as sort of – I always get them something at the end of the year because I basically am – an absentee parent for 5 months or so. I got them. They're just old enough to sort of play video games, and they really like driving games when we go to the arcade. So I got them Mario Kart 8 for our Nintendo Wii U system, mm-hmm. And I think it's just gonna it's going to be pretty mind blowing for them. But I told my 4 year old. A couple of weeks ago when he was talking about, when are we going to see you again? And I was like, oh, you know, football season, 2 weeks left. And I got a present for you at the end of football season.
Oh, that's nice.
But and I was like, but you got to wait 2 weeks. And his reaction was 2 weeks. And I was expecting him to say, that's an eternity for a kid. But
yeah.
He said 2 weeks. That's not very long at all.
Oh,
and I was like, good boy.
Yeah, you got a wife's
nice
kid.
Work, buddy.
And it's nice you brought him something back from the trip, because I remember my dad used to go on trips, furniture sales market, and he would he'd always bring us something back. And the 1 year, listen, here's some advice. I'm going to give you some parenting advice, Gary, because I
yes.
remember what it was like to
I
be
need
a kid. One year, my dad, I needed a new kickstand on my bike. And so my dad came back, and the kind of stuff he didn't give us, like souvenirs from the places, because souvenirs really they pretty much suck. He gave us actual gifts, and like a toy gun was one of
Good.
Them. I remember it was a machine gun, so you held it down and it just kept making sounds as long as you held down the trigger. But he gave me the kickstand for my bike when he returned on one of the trips, and my heart sunk with disappointment, because I remember thinking, that's, I didn't know this word, but my thoughts were, that's a utilitarian gift.
Yes,
it
is. I
know that you would have gotten that anyway, because you're tired of my bike laying on its side. It doesn't bug me that my bike's on its side. It bugs you. So the kickstand was already coming. That's a horrible gift to give me, because that's just a business transaction. So I'm glad it's something like a Nerf football or a miniature football, you said, something like that, and not something from Atlanta that just fulfills a household need. You know, I don't know. Hey, here, Son, here's the sippy cup that you were wanting or whatever it is you give a four-year-old.
I stopped by the grocery store.
I don't know how old your kids are. Yeah. You told me. I forget.
I stopped at the grocery store on the way back. Brought you some Cheerios. My thing of the week, and a friend of the show, James Stafford, who is a loyal listener, who checks in with us quite a bit. He sent this, and I've said this in the past, and I do want to reiterate it again because it's like my least favorite thing about any championship in football is those shirts, those oversized shirts that they give the guys to put on the field so that they can then run the commercial that says, get the official championship on field gear, however they term it. It's like, if you go to a store, like a clothing store, and like, you know, they put the clothes like on a mannequin or something, they put it on the mannequin so that it looks good, so that you look at it and say like, oh, I would look like that. That shirt would fit me like that if I were to wear it. It's like the complete opposite. These guys look like complete. They look like I don't think I can swear. They look like complete a-holes, like wearing those absurd oversized shirts over their shoulder pads. It's just such a. It's such a stupid look. I can't get over it every time I see it. Like, why can't you just wait a little bit and, like, have them wear it to the press conference or something like that? Give them the hats. The hats are fine. The shirts are just so stupid.
I'm with you on that because it's hard to recognize players' faces because, you know, they wear the helmet, so you don't know. So I love it when they're in their jerseys because I always know off the jersey. I know everyone's jersey number like that. So they come in after the game today. Some of these guys came in with their shirt on. That was very frustrating to me because they made them hard to identify. So I'm with you on that. But for more selfish reasons, yours are kind of ephemeral and really, frankly, quite shallow.
It's a little bit of vanity in it.
Yeah.
They look ridiculous. They look completely ridiculous. There's supposed to be some, it's supposed to be a moment. It's supposed to be an incredible moment, and instead, I don't know, give them like jester caps or something like that, make them look even stupider.
All right, well, that's
apologies to anyone who wears jester caps.
Yeah, I'll tell you, this is not your strongest thing of the week, by the way.
More passionate. Yeah. I've never been more passionate. I think that's a wrap, Andy.
All right,
we're
going to
be back.
I'm sitting down here in this room. We did this in the business center room, as you remember.
Yes.
The podcast the other night, and I'm watching. It's now about 2:24 a.m., and some guy in the elevator, there's four elevators here, and there's a big glass door, so this is how I saw all this. And actually, Jonathan Jones and Connor Orr from our staff have come by and taunted me through the glass a couple times. But there's four elevators here, and one of them just dinged open, and some guy came running from around the corner, and I'll put it kindly, his body suggests he does not run often, and he went running to catch the elevator. It's 2:24 in the morning. Does he really think the other elevators won't be there in the blink of an eye when he pushes the up button? I just wish you could have been here to see it.
It could have been a bathroom emergency, something like that.
He's not. No, not if you're running. Because then he would have been walking fast. Not running. You don't run if you've got a bathroom emergency. You walk because you've got to be kegeling as you move.
Okay. Maybe. I'll think about this one. Think about the physics.
You call your buddy. Who's your buddy that you got all excited about?
Carlo Rovelli.
There you go.
He is awesome. He is, I would fire you and put him on this podcast any day.
I know you would. I know. Even though you had to explain football to him all night. Well, good. So we're done then. We got all our football
stuff done.
And you just have to stay up and wait for me to send in this article that I'm finishing up, which means
yes.
You're up for another couple hours, and I'm going to go to bed.
As far as the podcast goes, though, enjoy your lengthy offseason, Andy, and I'll talk to you in about 48 hours for our next podcast. But as for now, thanks to researchers Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor for making us sound smart. Thank you to Shelby Royston, as always, who makes us sound good. And most of all, thank you to you guys for listening all season long to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You really are the best, and we're – you know, more than anything, I should have said this earlier. We're very appreciative of you. Send those questions in for the mailbag stuff on Thursday. Talk back at themmqb.com. Just put podcast in the subject line, or you can get us on Twitter or Facebook. We have a lot more shows on the MMQB Podcast Network. You'll get Albert Breer, Jenny Brentis, and Connor Orr every Wednesday. We're going to do one more gambling show on Friday. Andy and I will do a full off-season slate of this show, the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. So make sure you subscribe to the MMQB Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. And we will see you guys on Thursday.